Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining today's Leader Edge teleseminar with Jim Doyle and Roxanne Emmerich. Thank God it's Monday. As a reminder, all lines will be on listen-only mode. We will conduct a question-and-answer session at the conclusion of the call. At this time, it's my pleasure to turn the call over to Mr. Jim Doyle so that we may begin.
All right. Thank you, Edmund, and welcome, everybody, whether or not you're listening live or you're going to join us on the download. Welcome. This is our final teleseminar of 2009, and I have to tell you, I don't think there's anybody sad about saying goodbye to 2009. Certainly the toughest year I think any of us have seen in the media business, but hey, we're still laughing, our kids still love us, so and we're on to 2010, where there's all kinds of reasons why things are going to be better. And a special welcome to the new members of our Leaders Edge group. We are thrilled and privileged that you're a part of our efforts, and look forward to getting to know you better in the next couple of years. I'm really excited about today's call, although I have to tell you, just seconds before we started the call, Edmund, who's our host from the conferencing company, said, thank God it's Monday. Is that a joke? Because it certainly sounds like the most incredulous title, but that is the title of Roxanne Emmerich's best-selling book, Thank God It's Monday. And when I read it this summer, I said, boy, I really want her to be part of our teleseminar series with this group. Roxanne is called America's Most Sought-After Workplace Transformation Expert, and that's really what she talks about. How do you transform workplaces into high-performing cultures? Sales and Marketing Management magazine calls her one of the 12 most requested speakers in the country, and her skill is in transforming negative workplace performance and environments into results-oriented cultures. I have a tremendous respect for Roxanne's business as a speaker colleague. She is the president and CEO of the Emmerich Group, consulted and spoken to most of the financial institutions in the top 1% of performance, as well as clients like Merck and Pfizer, Alliance, Lockheed Martin, and hundreds of other leaders in every industry. And she was inducted to the National Speaker Hall of Fame, National Speaker Association Hall of Fame, and I can tell you, you don't get into that group unless you are something very special. Roxanne, congratulations on the book. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Jim.
And so I got to ask, isn't it thank God it's Friday?
Well, it's thank God it's Friday, too. But that's exactly why I wrote the book, is that most people don't want to be at work anymore, and it's showing in the numbers. In fact, right now, the statistics that were done a couple of years ago showed that one out of every three payroll dollars is lost due to disengaged employees. That's a huge bottom line issue, and the numbers are getting worse. And so, I created this book based upon a process I've been teaching companies for the last 20 years that in one day completely transforms the numbers and the attitudes by doing real life practical things.
So you're saying that companies who are like, well, let me just back up for a second, that a third or more of all our workers or all their time is unproductive, and that's why.
Well, actually, the numbers are pretty scary. It's like 71% of employees are what they call not engaged, actually 29% are actively disengaged, which means they're actually working against you. But it's one out of every three payroll dollars that's lost due to these disengaged employees who just don't want to be there. And so there'd really be no reason for a recession if we just clean this up. And you know, we have clients who hadn't grown more than 2% a year for 10 years in a row that within 30 days of this process grew 35%. Now, that doesn't happen every time, but it happens more often than you could imagine, because what we're doing is we're showing people that when you get people back to throwing their heart over the bar and being passionate about what they do, and you take the adult daycare behaviors out of the workplace, it's amazing how much work can get done that really services the customer.
I want to talk about the adult daycare behaviors in a little bit.
I knew you'd want to.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the adult daycare behaviors are all the behaviors that when people don't bring their higher self to work. So it's gossip, it's whining, it's excuses, it's nobody told me, it's passive aggressive, it's all the game playing that takes away our passion to be there. I don't know about you, but I remember I started my first job in banking, and I thought maybe someone had passed around a memo saying, check your personality at the door before I got there, because everybody was emotionally constipated. You probably can't relate to that in radio, but that's how it was in banking. And it occurred to me that most people, when they start their jobs, that very first day their shoes are shine, their shirt is pressed up, and they've told their mamas that they're going to go be amazing. And then within about 2 weeks, they discover that they work with dweebs, you know, these people who who are playing all these mind games with them all day long. And they realize that they're shooting toward wildly toward mediocrity. And within about 2 weeks, their sights are lowered, too. And so what we do is we show companies how to, within one day, transform a culture so that people all get that feeling back at the same time and get about doing the right things as opposed to just doing busy work.
So you don't subscribe to the theory that you should fire the dweebs?
There's a good chance that some could have that happen as an end result. In fact, after the, you know, what we do in this thing called a kick-butt kickoff is we work with the managers first in the afternoon, then we do an all-employee meeting in the evening. But with the managers in the afternoon, we teach them something called the conversation, which people just love. And we used to keep statistics on this. I haven't been recently, but we used to show that over 90% of the time when someone had this conversation with people, it would win their hearts over and they would really clean up their behavior. But I'll just, can I do it on you, Jim?
Oh, yeah,
pretend like
boy,
you're
would
the,
you?
You're the bad boy? Okay.
Yeah.
So, Jim, I'm so excited about where this team is going, and my sense is, Jim, that you don't share that excitement. And that's okay, because maybe this isn't your thing. And if this isn't your thing, you've just got to go find your thing. Life's too short. And then all you do is you say, so, Jim, let's meet tomorrow about 2 o'clock, and let me know what you decided. And all I'm doing is putting the monkey on your back and really calling you tight on the fact that your behaviors are not in alignment, but we're not going to talk about behaviors here. We're going to talk about what's really going on, which is the attitude, so we can clean up this behavior, but it's going to come out sideways, you know, eventually anyway, because that's the game playing that people do. And so what you're doing is you're basically saying, I'm on to you, and
right.
We're not going to keep talking about behaviors because that's not the problem. That's the problem, too, but that's not the core problem. And so what you're doing is you're getting people to decide, do I want in or do I want out? Either is a good choice.
And can you just repeat the wording real quick?
Sure. And I have it in the book, too. It's called The Conversation. Step one is, I'm so excited about where this team is going. Now, the reason that you do this is you're discussing with people that this team is going with or without you, so get the heck out of denial because it's not all about you. And then the second step is, after you say, I'm so excited about where this team is going, is my sense is, and I could be wrong, but my sense is that you don't show that excitement. Now, the reason you do that, Jim, is because they're going to want you to, they're going to pin you down on facts. Well, why do you say that? Who said something? You know, give me some evidence. And you can't win that game. I don't know how many teenagers that the people on the line have raised, but I will tell you that after having raised 4 teenagers and 3 exchange students, I know behaviors that are slippery sliding, and I know that if you allow a little bit of slip, you're going to keep sliding. And so what we're doing here is we're not allowing any slippery slopes here. All we're saying is it's my sense. I could be wrong. I hope it is. It's just my sense. Well, why do you say that, Jim? It could be wrong, you know, and so you just go right into it's just my sense. And then the third step is, and that's okay. And what you're doing there is you're basically taking your skin out of the game and saying, this isn't my problem, this is your problem. You've got to make a choice. And whatever choice you make, I'm sure it'll be a good one, but you need to make a choice now. And so the last part is, if this isn't your thing, you've got to go find your thing. And what you're basically helping people become aware of is that when people aren't happy at work, it's usually because they're not a happy person. And if they choose joy, then everything changes. And you know, and once they choose and go, you know what, I'm going to be a contributor. So instead of complaining about things that aren't working, I'm going to go fix those things. It's amazing how much work can get done.
I love that. But let me play, I don't know, devil's advocate, but I'm just thinking about the managers of our TV stations and cable companies that are listening to this call. Is this a conversation that I would have even with a top-performing biller whose attitude stinks?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask that question. I'll tell you what, it's an attitude, it's a question that you have with that person because you need that person in. Now, it's scary, and you may lose one, and you have to be prepared for that because here's what's really going on. We've had so many companies over the year who will say to me, oh, Roxanne, I don't know. You know, in fact, we had one organization where their top 3 producers all were, you know, the ones that were contaminating the spirit of the organization. And they let that entire team go before they even talked to me about it. And I thought, oh, boy, I sure wish you would have waited till the kickoff. I think we could have saved them. And I thought, oh, this does not bode well, because these people really accounted for 60% of the production of the whole organization. And I'm thinking, ro-ro, the doors, right? And what was astonishing was within a month, they actually had increased billing. And so because the rest of the team is going, thank goodness you're taking care of us. In fact, I got a statistic for you that's pretty amazing. It says that American Insights Workplace Survey finds that 54% of U.S. workers are planning to look for a new job once the economy improves, and for 30-year-olds, that number jumps to 71%. But what's interesting on that whole point is why they're leaving. And what they found out is that 87% of employees say that working with a low performer has decreased their productivity, hampered their development, and made them at one point or another want to leave their job. And 97% of employees would be thrilled if their company more aggressively managed those people who had the bad attitudes. Isn't that interesting?
I could not agree with that more. In fact, I remember as a manager going to a management conference, and our company, which was known for taking care of people forever, our own employees gave us the highest negative ratings on our tolerance of poor performers. I mean, mm-hmm. Stars want to work with stars.
Mm-hmm. Because they end up getting all the work on their shoulders, and they have the impact of not getting the results. Because, when you don't have authenticity of communication, in other words, Jim, if I tell you I'm going to do something and I don't do it, then the next time you're going to go, well, I don't know if I can trust Roxanne because she said she was going to do something and she didn't come through. And then they start working around me, and then everybody starts working around me, and suddenly, I'm just kind of looking busy all day as I get up and go get coffee all day long, but I'm not producing the results. And so the point here is to get people understanding that you've got to live your word. And when you live your word, people will trust you. And when trust goes up, we have a workplace that works.
So I want to talk specifically about your process of transformation. But is it safe to say that without that kind of engaged leader, nothing's going to happen?
It's safe to say, but it's not true all the time, Jim. I have seen receptionists turn around workplaces. I have seen the parking lot attendant turn around these businesses. I've been doing this work for 20 years, and I have seen miracles. Every morning we have a huddle here, and we always share a client testimonial, and we get so many in that we never have to repeat anything, and about the results that they get. And we get so many where it's like, hey, I was the pretty far down the totem pole person, and I went in and I did this and this and this, and this stuff really works. And so, I'm always telling people, get a copy of the Thank God It's Monday for yourself, get one for your boss, but don't throw it on his or her desk and walk away and not pretend like you didn't send it, because that's passive aggressive and that's not going to work. But sit down with your boss and sit down with a couple colleagues, get them some copies, and say, guys, I want to implement this stuff. I mean, look at the testimonials at the front of the book from some of these clients, the results that they're getting. If they're getting it, why can't we get this? And so let's get busy applying some of these concepts to really creating a sane workplace. And the book's very extensive in detailing it. And the ThankGodIt'sMoney.com site, Jim, has, I do a free audio every Monday morning. That's a minute that companies all over the world are using in their huddles. And people will say to me, my gosh, these Thank God It's Monday audios really turn around our company, because we sit down at the end of that 1 minute and we look each other in the eye and go, ooh, we got to work on that. And so it's practical, not PhD kind of stuff. Just use it every day to clean up the crazy-making stuff that goes on in the workplace.
Okay, so describe you're coming into a television station or to the ad sales operation of a cable company, and you want to help them change their culture to one where people are fired up and energized and want to be there. How does that process start? What do you do? What can we learn and steal from you in this call?
Okay. Well, first of all, the first thing we do is we work with the management team, because everything is a leadership issue. And we do a process. It's kind of hard to explain, but it's really about getting people to let go of the old biases and anger and stories and excuses, and really get people having authentic communication and appreciating each other and knowing the language of appreciation and the language of cleanup. Because language is the precursor of results. I can walk into any company. I started off as a commercial lender out of college, and I'd go in from business to business, and I'd walk in, and I used to say to my boss, I can tell you which businesses are making money and which ones aren't, and which ones are growing and which ones aren't, just by listening to 3 minutes of conversation. And he said, no, you can't. I said, sure, I can. He said, no, you can't. I said, sure, I can. And this was, you know, a few decades back, let's say, and maybe, you know, but I remember that we had a bet, and he bet me a bottle of wine that I really couldn't do it, and I said, I can do it. And so he called on 10 businesses in a row, and I called it right in 10 out of 10 cases, and he said, how do you do that? And I said, listen to the language. If you listen to excuses, you have people who aren't getting results. If you have gossip, you have no trust, and so nobody's going to trust leadership because people will always make up things, and of course the boss is always the idiot, and so nothing's moving ahead along that path, and people are feeling unsafe. If you have people saying words like "I'll try," as opposed to "I'll get that done," or "I'll work on," as opposed to "I'll conclude that by Tuesday," and here's what it'll look like. That tells you everything. So what we do is we take dysfunctional language out of the workplace, and I know because I've worked with radio stations over the years that there's a fair amount of it. You know, different industries have a higher level of crazy language, and I know that as an industry, I would see a little bit more in the industry that you specialize in.
So
that's bad news. That's bad news, isn't it? I know there's people listening going, oh, I'm sure, you know, if she only knew.
Well, I think that's the reaction, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is because, you know, and we've all been there where it's kind of like a, dang it, isn't there anything I can do that will get through to this gang that I'm not the enemy. I'm on your side. Come on, guys. I'm coaching you on performance, but I need you to listen to me. I need you to stop the mind games. I need you to stop hurting each other. I need you to stop the gossip, because when you gossip, it creates such an unsafe work environment that you may as well bring baseball bats and beat the heck out of each other. You will be healthier at the end. So, you know, this process is about getting people all in the same room together and saying, we agree we're going to treat our customers this way, which is a much higher level of performance, and we make agreements that we will treat each other in these ways, and that's a whole different way of treating each other. And the next, you know, when we finish this process, people line up and they're crying, and they say things like, I've been working here for 18 years, and I've hated every day of it, and I can't wait to go to work tomorrow. And then, you know, so many of our clients have won Employer of the Year within a year. Now, these places were a mess. And so I don't want people disheartened. If you think that you can't fix it, I'm just here to assure you, yes, you can. And get busy. Just get going on this stuff.
And let me be clear, and then I'm going to ask you to get specific, maybe in an example about in an industry that you would do a lot of work in. But a sales manager of a TV station doesn't need their general manager. The sales manager of a cable company doesn't need corporate approval to change the culture in their organization, right?
No. No, you know, the culture is just the feel. It's the conversation. You're just teaching people how to be better people is all you're doing. It's just about having that conversation change. And you know, so you don't have to go to a board about this or or the boss. It's just something where, you know, it's like I have a receptionist I just got an email from. She's working in a and she'd been to our Lead the Transformation course, and she'd been working for a company that does some kind of highly technical work in the medical field, and they had said, oh my gosh, the culture of this organization was terrible. So they sent a couple of their people, and the president was there, and they brought the receptionist. And I said to her in the program, listen, you have more control of this organization than the CEO does. I guarantee you that is the truth. So because you can go to people and say, Jim, you know, when you said that thing that way and did it that way, it created this mess, and can you do it this way from now on? Do I have your commitment? Okay, thank you very much. And you can go to the next person and say, hey, when you talk badly about so-and-so behind their back, let's go talk to them because there's probably another side of the story. Let's get this cleaned up and let's really work through this because I don't want you hurting that person and I don't want you having the hurt of me not trusting that I can't turn my back, and so let's get that cleaned up. And so they can very beautifully tackle these kind of behaviors and move through it. Does it help if the CEO is involved? You bet, but it's not necessary.
So when you work with a bank, an industry you know well, does the process begin by getting on the same page about how we're going to treat customers and each other?
Yes. Well, it begins with getting the managers knowing a whole different way of managing. And then the next piece is in when we do the evening session of the Kick Butt Kickoff, we do three things. We create a vision of what extraordinary looks like. And I will tell you that 95% of the time, when I'm asking them to share, because I break them into groups, and it's a four-minute process, if you can imagine. I mean, companies spend like years working on their vision. We do it in four minutes. And then we have people share, and people are on top of their chairs. Over 95% of the time, I'm like, okay, guys, safety code, get back down. But they get so excited. They're like, we want to go. We want to share. And at the end of this process, people are like screaming and yelling, going, we want this. And the whole place just buys in, and you can just see their hearts go over the bar. It's just a beautiful thing. And then we make agreements about in every moment when a customer forms an opinion of you. So in your business, it's like how you take the order and how you answer the phones and how you handle a billing error and how you do a sales call to a business for an ad and the time frames for how you respond. All those would be the things that you want to be measuring. You get them to make agreements about what will be the quantified numbers they're going to hit in each of those areas. And so everything gets quantified, measured, and celebrated. So in the book, I talk about the Hoopa team's role.
Can I just back up? So you're saying, because you just said something that I think is really, really important, is everything gets, what did you say, quantified?
Everything gets quantified and measured. And so we do a series of rollouts. And so the rollouts work like, okay, now we're rolling out how we answer the phones. That'll go on for 2 months. We're gonna teach you how to do it. That'll only take like 15 minutes. Then the measurement starts tomorrow. And so you'll be mystery shopping. You never know when. And then there's a process with the mystery shopping where whereby they're coached and then celebrated. Coached and then celebrated. And the celebrations are ruckus, wild, crazy, nuts. I mean, we have pictures of our clients doing amazingly bizarre things. Most of our clients are community bankers. So if they can do it, I think radio people and cable people can do this too.
Yeah. Well, the TV people maybe not because they've had a...
There's always that
certainly
group,
radio,
right?
They could party.
So the key is, you know, and most organizations think fun is separate from work. It's like, no. We make all the significant pieces that should be measured, the celebration of those, fun through daily huddles, through weekly celebrations, and through quarterly really ruckus wild celebrations that really tie into the strategy of the organization. So it's a system, and it's all about celebrating the things that work, but first defining those things and then measuring, celebrating. And people should always know at any moment they're being measured and they'll be celebrated and or coached.
So can I? I'm just trying to make sure I'm totally into this.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts when an organization builds together a vision of what extraordinary looks like.
Yes.
That moves to, okay, how does extraordinary look like in the various elements where we touch customers and I think from reading your book and when we touch each other.
Right.
Step two. Step three, and I may be simplifying this, is when we define the behaviors, then measure, and then begin to start to celebrate it as we see more and more of those behaviors.
Well, I actually define this as my three steps as, first, you know, one is create the vision of what extraordinary looks like. Two is defining with very explicit details how you'll handle every moment of truth when you form an impression on a customer, and then immediately, you know, rolling out those pieces. And then the third piece is the agreements about how we'll treat each other. And I'll tell you, that's where every one of those pieces creates magic. But when you do all that together, we do it in 2.5 hours, if you can imagine. 2.5 hours. At the end of 2.5 hours, people are crying, saying, again, this is so great. And the next morning, we have them play loud music as people are walking in. And then there's these rituals. From that point on, there's rituals of celebration for doing the right things. It's all about making it fun.
And what you describe as the huddle in your company is just a ritual where on a daily basis we're recognizing behaviors and accomplishments that go back to our vision.
Right. So so there's always a lesson. So somebody's teaching the value for the day or a theme, or maybe they're going into a customer service standard. So there's always a lesson. There's always a celebration of testimonials. And then there's always acknowledgments of the numbers and celebration of that, like, hey, we got, so-and-so brought in an $800,000 account. Wow, that's fabulous, you know, and,
right.
and so-and-so who's been calling on so-and-so forever just got this. Way to go. Hey, we just did this great interview with such-and-such, you know, the listeners went crazy over the call. Woo! And so you're celebrating all those components, maybe something in billing. So you're celebrating. Then you have a little piece about, you know, what's going on for the day, so everybody's really attuned in with what projects are moving through, whatever. But the whole thing is it's a stand-up meeting, never goes beyond 10 minutes.
Okay, so there are cynics on this call.
You think? and I would be, too. I just want you to know. I mean, I was an economics major, and so, you know, I could find anything wrong with anything, right? And so I'm sure people are going, you got to be kidding me. It can't be this easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my people will never go for this. And, by the way, what do I have to celebrate this year?
Right, yeah.
What do you say to the cynics?
I say to them that I've been doing this for 20 years in the banking industry, and right now, if you know what's going on in banking, you can see that most of them are falling completely out of the sky. And we have banks that were in trouble with FDIC when 2 years ago when everything was great, who are now at the top of their game and performing in the top 20% of banks. So if they can do that turnaround in this economy, then I'm just not going to buy your story. And notice that at this point, you might be a little part of the problem, if not a big part of it. And so it's all about getting honest with that piece. Our clients tell us one thing.
You mean the cynic may be part of the problem?
The cynic may be part of the problem. And all with the best of intentions, all with the understanding of, but you don't understand. Look what we've been through. Look what we've tried. It's just awful here. Well, you know what? It's just awful. As I told my clients, 2 years ago before the recession started, listen, people are going to be talking about a recession, and make sure to send a memo out to everyone in your January 2nd correspondence that says, listen, the media will talk a lot about a recession this year. We have chosen not to participate. This is the year where we are going to completely pull ahead, be outrageous in terms of how well we take care of our customers, give them massive value. One of the key concepts I teach Jim at the beginning of the book is called Life Gives to the Givers and Takes from the Takers, and the world has a perfect accounting system. So can I give you an example of how this would really work in your industry?
By the way, that's actually a quote that I love so much that I have it on my Facebook page.
Oh,
I love
wonderful.
That quote.
Wonderful.
Life gives to the givers and takes from the takers. The world has a perfect accounting system.
Yep. So the key is that, for instance, if somebody's thinking, I need to go hit my quota, I need to go sell something, they have the wrong come from. If they come from the place of, listen, there are businesses that are struggling. I have to show these businesses how they can turn their business around. I got to show them how to do media in such a way that they're going to turn around their business. And so I have to show them the economics of that. I have to have something for them that's so powerful, that's so well thought out. And they have to know my heart is in the right place, because if they don't buy, I have let them down. If you have people who think like that, you got a business that's thriving. And I'll tell you, in most businesses, that's not how they think. And that's why this process works so darn well, is because once people get, oh, my goodness, we have to go get our act together in this area, our people are all into fear. You know, years ago, I heard a quote that basically says that when you take psychology down to its basic components, every emotion can be brought down to one or two. It has a base of fear or of love. And if you're making a decision based upon fear, it's not going to be a good decision. If you make a decision based upon love, it's going to be a phenomenal decision. So if you take that back to your sales team going out there and calling on people going, oh, my gosh, I have to hit a quota, and the market is going down, and that business just went down, and I just lost 30% of my business because I lost that account, and they're in that scarcity mentality, you just know it's going to get worse from here. If, on the other hand, they go, I have to love these clients back to prosperity. I have to embrace them. I have to be a stand for them. I have to show them how much I care. And I got to develop some good stuff. You know, the big fallacy in business is the fallacy that customer satisfaction matters. That's crazy. The only thing that matters is customer success.
Yes.
If you take a satisfied customer and you give them a better price someplace else, they're going to leave you.
Yeah. Yeah, yep. Wait, absolutely.
So it's all about the focus on the right things.
So you're suggesting that a time like this, an economy like this, is actually an easier time for a sales organization to leapfrog its competitors, because the other competitors in a marketplace may be so much into that scarcity and fear mentality.
Yes, you have salespeople who aren't making calls because they think, what does it matter? You have people not taking good care of their customers because they're cutting back budgets. They're not taking the time to do it. I mean, it's just a mess. And so what a great opportunity to really move things through and create an immeasurable impact for the future. And so I just think these are the best times ever. Recessions are when, you know, if you look at the statistics, recessions are when people pull ahead.
But I think that as an industry, we preach that to our clients, but maybe fail to recognize that that same thing is true for us.
It, you know, we always forget the thing that's right in front of us that wants us, that's suited right there to help us. And that's the amazing part is that, you know, if we only did what we knew, miracles would happen. But, you know, my husband has this wonderful quote. We were watching this young couple one time, and there was a woman who was she was working down in I think we were in the Caribbean, and she was serving food and drinks to different tables. And there were these tables where young men were kind of flirting with her as they went, but she was handling it appropriately. But her boyfriend came in just to be in the room, and he's watching this, and he's just going crazy. And you can see that this relationship's about to blow up that night when she gets off work. And my husband said, isn't it funny how when we most need ourselves, we're least available to ourselves? Now, I have thought about that statement about a million times. When we most need ourselves, we're least available to ourselves. And I can relate to that. Yep. It's like I know better. Why am I getting into anger and fear right now and having that constrict me as opposed to going back into, oh, wait a minute, life's perfect. This is all going to work out. Get back into that abundant consciousness and go make some miracles happen. Yep. And so when we're released, you know, we have this self-sabotage mechanism, and that's why you have to have tools in place that stop people. And that's why in the manager session, what we're doing is we're teaching people how to stop themselves and how to stop each other when we go into that place, because we all go there. And so you better have a team of people around you who know exactly how to bring you back around again.
And what I'm hoping happens as a result of this is that people will buy the book and use the principles in the book to launch this kind of effort within their own sales organization. One of the managers on this call gets together with the other managers on their team, what are some of the key, thresholds, stumbling blocks, breakthroughs that you want to hope occurs during that management discussion?
Well, you know, so much gets broken down at that middle management level. And when I say that, when I'm speaking in front of an audience, all the heads are nodding. Oh, yes, that's right. I mean, everybody knows that the leader will have one idea, and then the middle managers have a different interpretation of it. And then by the time it gets to the front line, it's pretty funky. And so, you know, one of the things that you want to do is create clarity of conversation. And here's what I'm a believer of. We take clients. We have a client in Tennessee that when we started working with them, they were in a struggle. Really thinking if they had tried everything. They had tried all the fancy strategic planners in the country. They had tried all the fancy sales training in the country. Nothing was working. And they brought us on, and what they didn't tell me at that time, and I'm kind of glad they didn't because I may have gone into fear not being able to perform as well, but they said to me afterward that they had decided that if this didn't work, they were going to sell. Well, like 700 people would have lost their jobs. And so what we did is we went in and did this process, and they sold their sales were more in the next 30 days than they had sold in the previous 10 years combined.
New product sales.
What's that?
New product sales.
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
You know, what a hoot. Okay, and so I got a letter back from the CEO saying, it's a miracle, it's a miracle. It's not a miracle. It's a process. And then they said to me, okay, this works so great. Okay, we're really tracking. This is really working. Okay, tell us what we're going to do now over the whole 3 years that we're working with you. And I'm like, no. If I tell you that, you're just going to wig out, and it's going to be overwhelming, and you won't get anything done. I've got you on a need-to-know basis. I'm going to give you about 4 to 5 assignments at a time with the complete templates to put this into place, and then, you know, we'll just take you along. And so the CEO at that point hangs up the phone and gets her entire senior exec team kicked out of the office, and she calls me back and says, okay, tell me, because I just need to know. And I said, oh, it's against my better judgment, but I'll tell you, I've never done this before, and subsequently I never did it afterward either. because when I finished, she said, oh my gosh, it's so overwhelming. We'll never be able to do those things. And I said, oh, sure you will. Just forget everything I just said, and I'm just going to give you a few things to do at a time. And it's fun to hear her comments now because she says that was so true, and it was just so easy. And now they, you know, we're well beyond the 3 years, and we're continuing, I think, starting our sixth year now. And every year they just keep advancing and building on their base, and because we keep giving them more and more initiatives to roll out and things to do, and because you have to get your base down. But the most important base, Jim, is they've got to get the hearts over the bar. Until you get the attitude straightened around, nothing else works, because the games are being played, and those games come right out of your top line and your bottom line.
But what impresses me about that story about the Tennessee company is it's not a 30-day rah-rah. You're talking about long-term, sustainable, measurable, extraordinary change.
That's right. And, you know, and we've been doing this mostly in the banking industry, although I've worked in all industries over the last 20 years. I have a whole division and company that just specializes in the banking industry.
Right.
But our banks actually came to us and said, gosh, can you start offering something for our clients? Because we wouldn't have all these bad loans if our clients got this stuff. And so we came up with this Lead the Transformation course, and we just had our first year of that this year, where we have companies from all across the country who are learning this process. And they're just having a hoot with it, too, because it's like, okay, they get to learn a basic process. It's just all about learning that it's a system, and most of the things I learned in undergraduate and graduate school about business have actually served to hurt me more than help. And so what we're doing is we're saying business isn't that complicated. Here's the three steps to market, to do marketing. Here's the seven-step process for your sales process. Here's how you quantify this piece. Here's how you get, and we just make everything simple as opposed to making everything so difficult. And so it's all about getting it so that when you go from A to B, that it's a straight line. And in most businesses, I watch how their brains work, and they go from A to B, and they usually go to Siberia and back through the Ukraine and back over to B then.
But always, even as you go from A to B, always with this commitment to what does extraordinary look like?
Always with the commitment for that and to keep people focused on it, because that's the biggest problem. You get a lot of people who may not be clinically ADD, but they're ADD, all right, because they're doing all kinds of things that have nothing to do with what your business is about. And so if the celebration and the focus is about that, then people really start to master doing the things that really will drive the business, as opposed to all that busy work that allows for them to play the victim archetype out of, oh, you poor thing, isn't it awful, you know, that we can't do such and such. People love to play the game of, oh, poor me. And what we're trying to do when we come into an organization, and not trying, what we do is we get people to give up the victim archetype and stop trying to get their recognition from, oh, poor me, look at the hours I'm working, and focus that instead on, ooh, look at me, look at the results we're creating here, and look at the results I'm helping our team create. So it's about changing the focus.
How important is the celebration component of that?
Oh, it's the biggest part of all.
Yeah.
You know, because it was last year or 2 years ago that I read like 17 books on brain research. I just really got intrigued with, you know.
Because you had no time or too much time on
it. I've always read a ton of books, but that particular year I was really into how the brain functions. And what was really astonishing is like 95% of what they know about how the brain works, they've discovered in the last 10 years. And in fact, they've found that most of the stuff they thought they knew about the brain prior to that time, they've proven to be wrong. And, you know, and what they know is that there's huge plasticity in our brains that we can really change. So if you're depressed, you don't have to be. You just got to go do happy things over and over again. And suddenly the neural pathways in our brains restructure so much that we can't go back to being miserable. And so celebration does so much. It supports you doing the right things. It supports the happy factor. It pushes away all the drama for the ick, because the brain is now focused on the woohoo, aren't we great, as opposed to woohoo, aren't we miserable. And so it just changes everything. And so it sounds trite, and the scientific evidence behind it is so darn profound that you can't ignore it anymore.
Yeah, in fact, in our boot camps for sales managers, we teach that 70% of the people on a sales team are in, you know, Tony Alexander's socializer quadrant, and their number one motivations are applause, excitement, and fun.
Yes, and
so
they're also very distracted
people. In a sales organization,
people.
That's especially true.
Yes, and if you think about that combination of that, that kind of type of personality profile and combine that with kind of the creative nature of your industry, and you know you have an unfocused brain. And so what if you started focusing the
Are you talking about me again?
Yeah. Yeah, somebody gave me a memo about you. And so if you can get people focused on the right things, imagine what they'll do for that applause and recognition. It's amazing.
But if it goes on for... there's two things that keep resonating with me in this call. Number one is if you don't have real clarity about what it is you are going to, what's the behavior you want to reward and celebrate, then that doesn't work. And number two, if you only do it for 45 days, that doesn't work either.
That's right. It's got to continue, and it's got to be focused on a few things. And so, listen, if your strategic plan, first of all, if you don't have a strategic plan, oops. And if your strategic plan is more than one page, oops, okay? So on your strategic plan, you need to have like three to five key initiatives, 3 to 5 key results, and have that all tied into the target markets you're going after. And
so
how do
three
you
to five key initiatives, 3 to 5 key results.
And all of that should be started with who's our target market. And so you can't say goofy things like small business. That's just way too, those are fat words, way too esoteric.
Okay.
You got to get down to something concrete, like saying, listen, we are really good with community-minded small business owners who tend to be in a high-growth mode. So that's one of our markets. Another market could be women-owned businesses that happen to be in the service industry, okay? And so, so part of the deal is you got to show that kind of personality, who to go call on. So, like, I live in Minneapolis. You look around Minneapolis, there are a lot of businesses here. So you hire a salesperson and say, get going, they're going to chase their tail calling on all the wrong kind of people. But you know who are the growing industries and who are the ones most likely to do advertising with you. Why wouldn't you want to get them focused on those are the people to go after first? Warm them up. You know, do nice things for them, invite them to things, send them things, you know, be attentive to them, and then start going in and start offering to do some business with them. And then from there, what are the key results, key initiatives, and then have those posted every day. So maybe it's a number of new accounts, okay, great. Maybe it's cross sales to existing accounts, great. Talk about those numbers in the huddle, talk about those every week in your weekly meeting, talk about those every quarter, about in the quarterly celebration, have everybody's incentive program celebration, have your contest, everything tied into those things. Take those distracted brains and focus those brains, and it's amazing the results you get.
Yeah, and so you're a lot more pragmatic. I mean, you talk about in your organizations having a hoopla team or celebration team, but you're really pragmatic. I mean, this is not like just rah-rah, you know, crap Boy Scout camp. This is I think there's a lot of managers who like who like the idea of celebration, but the celebration isn't tied to the performance objectives that are going to make them into a great company.
Exactly. You know, and it all goes down to this morning one of my team members came in and said that there was somebody who was looking at me to do speaking, but they said, oh, we're going to use a team of industry specialists from like Target and, you know, these major companies or whatever to talk about what they're benchmarking. And the gal who was talking to them is a very wonderful businesswoman. She's been an advisor to a lot of the top executives in the country. And she said, you know what I feel about that? That's a really bad idea. Let me tell you why. So she goes into this thing and they said, well, we don't want a motivational speaker. And she said back to him, listen, Roxanne isn't a motivational speaker. She is a pragmatic, get your business turned around businesswoman who happens to be able to speak, and if you want her to be boring, she can do that too. I thought that was a really good line.
Yeah, I actually love that answer. For those of you on the call, anytime people hear that, you know, like Roxanne or I are speakers, they'll always say, "Are you a motivational speaker?" And I always hope my stuff is motivating, but I'm not a motivational speaker. Because I think that's right. I mean, I think that what you just described, or what we're talking about, is, you know, that idea that we fire up people to go aimlessly off into some direction that they've determined. That's mm-hmm. not what you're describing here.
No, not at all. It's about getting people doing the right things, having fun doing it, taking out the drama, and getting back to that first day at work feeling where you told your mama you were going to be amazing, and now you're setting your sights back for that again. And so it's just that easy. But it's amazing how predictable it is that every organization gets off that course.
Can I ask you a question that sort of goes back to something we talked about before? Is it safe to say that in that kind of culture, a vision to be extraordinary, the specific steps to get there, celebration, measurement, celebration, recognition, the dweebs fire themselves?
The dweebs fire themselves.
Or get on board.
Yeah, well, and we have an accountability process that we teach where it's very, very clear when someone isn't meeting their minimums, and you know, here's the targets they need to be hitting, but here's the minimums. And so you never really have to have that conversation. I mean, when you come in the room and you kind of say, "Hey, we need to talk," they go, I know, I haven't, you know, I signed this little thing and I'm not meeting my minimums, and that means I need to either have a salary decrease, go on probation, or be released, which is it going to be? And it just makes it simple. But also, it takes the fear of it, because the minimums are really pretty low, and so that they really, you know, don't have to be in fear about that. And then the celebrations are all for the targets and the optimals, and so it really gets people focusing on those right things.
So you, that's a fabulous insight. So in your accountability process, you establish minimums, like a minimum number of new business clients that you'll bring in a quarter or a month. Mm-hmm. For a TV station. You establish goals, but you're celebrating the higher achievers.
Yes.
And if somebody's not meeting the minimums, that process gets clear real quickly.
Well, and the other thing that we do too is remember peer pressure from back when you were a teenager. Maybe I don't know how old you are, but I remember those days.
It's been quite a few
years back. But peer pressure is very powerful, and adults are just really big kids. And so one of the things that I do to make these things fun, too, is we have contests that we run, and we put them together in teams, and these teams compete against each other, and so it's a cross-sectional kind of team. Like maybe you have somebody who's in production and someone who's in sales and someone who's in, you know, whatever, and they're a team. And so, but they get points, and so every time they hit their targets, they, you know, it's 5 points for the team. And so these teams start competing, and you start showing how the teams compare to each other, and suddenly everybody in the organization is starting to perform. So, like, I've done a ton of radio interviews over the last year, and I can tell you the degree of attention to detail about the time of those interviews or the numbers to call in on is atrociously filled with errors. So one of the things you may want to have, and that's got to cause so much disruption in an average radio station, because, you know, about a third of the time when I call in, I end up having to call three different numbers because, you know, the first two don't work or whatever. And we check the emails, and that's what they sent us, and the time is off. And I even did a big television station interview with one of the major networks this spring, and they had the time off by an hour. And just, thank God I moved fast enough to be able to make it. One of the things that you may want to have in their minimums is the level of accuracy they have on confirming presenters who are you know, presenting on the radio stations, and so
right.
You don't have the, "Well, let's just talk about our navel for the next hour because our presenter isn't here," and oops.
Yeah.
You know, so all those things can be attended to through that process.
But in this group, it's these are the salespeople that sell the ads that are on those shows, and what we're really working on is, you know, new business, or what we call upgrade opportunities from existing clients, or special sales, but you know, like the sports sale or website sale. But I guess what I'm hearing from you is that even your contesting ought to be in support of one of those four or five strategic objectives?
Everything. You lay out a strategy, you keep it simple, and everything aligns. And everything is measured to that. Everything is celebrated about that. And the dysfunctional stuff's got to go. And you put that equation together, and you take a really non-performing organization in the worst of industries, and you will see profits and growth. I've seen it over and over again for 20 years. You can't tell me it can't be done. I've seen it. I've worked with most of the largest companies in the country. I've worked with, you know, a lot of moms and pops all over. It's the same story.
And I guess I really want to say to the cynics, Roxanne's been doing this in the most conservative industry, the banking business in the country. We can change our organizations. We don't have to wait for change to be imposed upon us by some corporate structure. You and I are in charge. We can change.
That's right.
Roxanne, I promised our group that we would have some time for questions, and because I looked down the list of the questions I wrote, and I think we are down to three. I've only done three. What a great conversation! But let's, Edmund, let people know how we can get questions asked.
Certainly. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press 01 on your telephone keypad to be placed in the question and answer queue. Again, please press 01 on your telephone keypad to be placed in the question and answer queue.
All right. And Roxanne, while we do that, can you talk about Thank God It's Monday has a website?
Yes, thankgodit'smonday.com has a website. It has those audios on, and every Monday morning I come out with a fresh new audio that's a learning lesson. It lasts no more than 2 minutes, usually about a minute long. And it's designed with these concrete kind of things that we've been talking about, and it shows them how to do many of these things. So that'd be a good place for them to get started. The other thing, I know we had talked to him, I had mentioned to you a while back, I don't know if you recall, but I had said I would give your group, I would give away one free Lead the Transformation course, which is for 2010, it's being held May 18th and 19th as well. And so, but at that course, you come in and you learn the whole mechanical process about how to manage this kind of a transformation. And so if you want, I don't know how you want to handle that, if you want to do that after the call or on the call or whatever.
Well, I decided while we were talking that, with your permission, what I'd like to do is we'll get a list later on today of all the people who joined this call live.
Mm-hmm.
We'll draw from the group that had the opportunity to experience this live, and one of them will attend or have the right to attend, the ability to attend Roxanne's course in, and that'll be in Minneapolis, you say, in May?
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, good time to go to Minneapolis.
It should be warmer then.
Yeah, right.
Than
yeah.
it is today.
Yeah. And she promises. That's an opportunity to attend that and really learn how to affect that kind of transformation in your company. But on the website, thankgodit'smonday.com, you can sign up for the easing. There's ways that you can order the book. And then you've got some of the tapes and blogs and ideas. So that's a really, really good resource. Edmund, any questions?
Our first question is from Gary Peters. Gary, you may proceed with your question.
Hey, Gary. Hello.
Hi, Gary. Are you there?
Gary, if you have your phone on mute, if you could take it off, please.
Yeah, there we go. That's better.
Yeah, hey, Gary.
Jim and Roxanne, I appreciate your talks particularly resonated with my office. I have a situation where it's a sales team of 12 people, and I probably got about three or four people that have been kind of a cancer in the office from the standpoint that the way they treat the other people,
mm-hmm.
the old high school clique kind of thing. I don't know why that is, why they feel they get some power off of doing that, but is that something you've seen in other offices, in sales groups, and do you have any suggestions how to overcome it? I guess you had all kinds of suggestions already, but in particular this kind of a situation.
It's a great question, Gary. I do have a suggestion for you. I would sit down with each one of them individually, and another process that I write about in my book is it's a four-step process on how to address a behavior that needs to be changed, and the process is basically goes like this: when you, and then you list the specific observed behavior. So when you go out to lunch every day with the same other two people, the impact of that is that others feel kind of left out. My request is that from now on that you be very attentive to that and make sure that you're inviting other people along, that you're not always going as a threesome, that you're not getting together in the team because others feel out. Do I have your commitment about that? And so what you're doing is you're going into the eye of the needle. And so the key then, Gary, on this is to start off with those specific behaviors, those specific observable behaviors. Because if you just say, hey, you're doing click kind of behaviors, you're going to go, what do you mean? I'm just hanging out with my friends. But when you say, you know, when you do this specific behavior, it creates this mess. And my request is that you do this instead. Do I have your commitment? That's a language of power that's going to have them get what they're doing, not be able to defend it, really understand the impact of that, and then you're very specific about what you want instead, and then you're asking for a commitment with committed language as well. And that should help it immeasurably, unless, you know, the intention there is that they just want to hurt other people. Then you might want to go with the conversation, because
the conversation,
that other four-step process.
Yeah.
Basically, it says, are you in or are you out? Either one's a good choice. Let me know by tomorrow. But it's said more gracefully in the book, when it, in that four-step process I just taught you.
Can I do a follow-up question?
Sure.
Yeah. Do you have any idea why a manager, because obviously I've got managers that these folks report to, why a manager would go along with, when they know, in fact, this kind of thing's going on, because it's very obvious, why they would maybe enable that kind of thing to go on?
What would be the
process? Why would a manager go along with something like that?
Yeah, there could be any number of reasons. We do a lot of emotional intelligence testing, and I would guess that manager has one of a couple things going on. Either they have too high of an intuition and empathy score, which means that they just want to be liked, and they don't want to do that conflict thing, which means they'll let just about anything go on around them, and they're not going to go into the eye of the needle to address it. And so it could be some of that, or it could be that there's just a lack of awareness going on as well, or it may just be a lack of skill set. Like, they know they have to do something, they just don't know how to do it, and they don't want those three ganging up on them. So I'm guessing it could be one of those three things that's probably going on, and so I would just talk to the manager and say, you know, tell me what's getting away from you not dealing with this. Do you not know how? Are you afraid to? You just want to fit in? Like, what's at the core of this? So that, because I want to coach you through to make sure that you have the breakthrough in your management abilities, because otherwise the results you're going to have will be suffering, and I don't want you to be in that position. So how can I help you by having you be really authentic and sharing with me, like, what's really underneath why that's not being addressed?
Okay. Edmund, any other questions?
Yes, our next question is from Pat Patterson. Pat, you may proceed.
Hey, Pat.
Hi, this is Pat.
Hey, Pat.
How you doing?
Good. I just had a question on your sales contest. We do a lot of that. And in terms of execution and time commitment and whatnot, we just see that's where it kind of falls down locally. And how? What's your experience in terms of the best way to get management to commit to contests? I always hear, you know, why should I reward these people that are making my life miserable? and what actually motivates salespeople in your experience? Cash or the accolades? I mean, just kind of some insight on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, there's really a ton of research that all points to the same thing, which basically is that intrinsic rewards always trump extrinsic rewards. And in common language, all that means is motivating kind of things always trump money. And so what we do with our clients is we advise them, hey, you have some contests, but you don't have to give big old fancy expensive things. They just, you know, they want some goofy little thing on their desk, or they want, you know, a potential for a half day off, or something that just shows that you're being attentive to them and making a big deal. So one of the things that we do with our banks, for instance, is we're always trying to get them to understand the incredible value of cross-sales. So we say, okay, first of all, you have them fill out this form, and so you can figure out where are you at. So you have them figure it out 1 week, and you'll find out, hey, our cross-sales is at 2.2. So we say, listen, set the goal for 2.3, because you're going to do this every week, you're going to raise it. And so when, just by being attentive to it, you're going to go up to like 2.8 within a week. And but tell them, when we had 2.8, we're going to have a Dilly Bar party on Friday. Well, adults will go just about nuts for Dilly Bars or a pizza party. You can't even imagine how hard they're going to work to make sure that that happens. The other piece, then, is they should get feedback back in terms of how they're doing. Business Week, about a year and a half ago, had this amazing article, and it showed that when they researched these people, based upon their category, whether they're men or women or executives or frontline, on average, when they asked them, do you perform in the top 10% within your company, between 94 and 97% of people believe that they were a top 10% performer. Okay, so this is a problem. It's called disillusionment. And so what you're doing with this, you know, measuring and celebrating is people are starting to deal with reality. They can see where they are compared to others. And I don't believe in your traditional, like if somebody's number 8 out of 10 people, I don't want everybody to know that they're number 8 out of 10, but I want that person to know that they're 8 out of 10 so that they can start to deal with it, and you can handle compassionately with coaching, hey, I know it's not working for you right now, you know, what are you doing and how can we help you get that around again, because we care about you, we want you back on the top of the pack. And so, you know, it allows for them to really deal with some reality. So always lead with intrinsic rewards. Have them often. Have them fun. And it's the hoopla with which you give them that matters so much more than actually getting the pieces themselves.
Good. Hey, Edmund, we've got just time for just a couple more if there are any more in line.
We have no further questions at this time.
Great. That's because I've already abused Roxanne's time commitment to me today. I want to, first of all, thank all of the members of this group for being part of our call today and for experiencing this. And, Roxanne, I especially want to thank you. As we wrap up, Roxanne, I was wondering, can you think of a leader that you've worked with, you know, client maybe, who's really inspired you, and what did they do?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think
maybe a couple. Maybe it's more consensus.
Yeah, approximately. My very first boss was someone who really cared about humans, and he always showed he cared. You know, I was the first woman to work with 423 men as a commercial lender. and so they were all watching me to go, can she do it? But he was camping out at my desk all the time, showing me how to do things, making sure I was always in the top of the pack. Because he had three daughters, and he was committed that this woman was going to succeed. Because literally the CEO of the company would watch what I was doing and go, well, gosh, if Roxanne can do it, maybe we could hire another woman. And so, I mean, that's how it was back then. And now, obviously, those days are gone. But he just showed he cared, and he was very attentive to me getting it. There's a sales manager who is in one of the banks that we work with, and this bank is always one of the top three performing banks in the country and has been for almost two decades now. And she runs the highest performing division. And as a sales manager, she does something that nobody I've ever seen is willing to replicate, but it's what makes her amazing, and the results she gets amazing. She never sits behind her desk all day long. All she does is go from person to person to person and say, hey, what are you working on today? What's your pitch going to be on that one? How are you going to do it? If they say this, what are you going to do? How will you move through it? And so it's a real tight process that shows people how to. She's just constantly showing people how to do their jobs and making sure that they don't get lost. And at the end of the day, our sales manager roles really aren't sitting around looking at the documents. It's about being in there and, you know, and constantly coaching all day long.
And teaching and cheering and applauding. What a great call.
Celebrating.
This has been absolutely everything that I'd hoped it would be and more. I knew when I read Thank God It's Monday This Summer that this was a book that I think everyone who runs a business needs to read and think about. So I thank you so much for your time, Roxanne. I can't tell you how grateful I am for you doing this, and thanks to all of our Leaders Edge members. Happy holidays, everybody, and we look forward to seeing you on another one of these teleseminars in January of 2010. Thanks, everybody.
And thanks, Jim.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This call has been concluded.